This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
It's hard to believe that a tiny brown endangered wingless stonefly, which only lives in the mountain in Warburton, which is about 70 kilometres outside of Melbourne, has been at the centre of some big conversation lately.
Such a little insect to have such big conversations, Eden. Well, for the past 10 years, the Yarra Rangers Council has been working on an $11 million proposal to create a huge mountain bike track, 177 kilometres to be exact. Some locals are saying it will be world class, but others are worried about this little insect.
And it's not a new problem, Rochelle. We've been hearing for decades about the issues with housing developments in Melbourne, agriculture, roads. So what's the balance? Is there a balance for big projects and conservation?
And when you look at balance of tourism, progression and conversation...
You're used to saying conversation.
Conservation. Spit it out, Rochelle. Thank you so much. There is a really... I mean, you feel like one is going to lose out here, and there is only a handful of bike tracks that are going to be as big as this proposed one. It's going to be apparently gold class and put it up on the world stage alongside with some of the ones like in Tasmania.
Yeah, look, I didn't really know much about mountain bike riding before I did about a 9-month stint in Tasmania, and it is huge there. And the amount of money it's brought to the economy and local jobs. So I guess a big discussion is what's the benefit of that? I guess later on in the program, we'll also hear about quite an interesting take where the tourism industry in Tasmania is actually fighting for conservation because of these trails. So we'll hear more on that shortly, Rochelle, but really interesting take from that side of it.
And will all of Victoria benefit from what is a large bike trail, nearly 200 kilometres of bike trail in Warburton? We know that mountain bike riding is gaining in popularity. So would we all benefit from a track like this? And how do we protect the environment and the local ecology at the same time? Is a balance even possible?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria,
this is The Conversation Hour.
Good morning, I'm Rochelle Hunt. I'm in Melbourne, a little unable to speak today and also unable to get on a push bike. So I won't see myself getting onto this mountain bike trail if it gets up and running, Eden.
Oh, I'm Eden Hennon and I'm in Bendigo in central Victoria. Now, I wish I would say that I'm out on the local trails here in Bendigo. I'm not, but it is growing in popularity here, Rochelle, with some major mountain bike trails, particularly in Harcourt, south of Bendigo, that's gaining momentum over the past few years.
Well, we'll go to Bendigo a little later in the program. But if you live in the Warburton area, or maybe you're someone that loves mountain bike riding, what do you think about this proposal? Is there a way to find a balance between looking after the local ecology and making sure that tourism grows and that, you know, it's something that could potentially put Warburton on the global map? Let's go to Warburton now. Local resident Andrew Howison is the president of the Yarra Rangers Mountain Bikers. Andrew, how do locals feel about this? We know that on Virginia Trioli's program here on Mornings in Melbourne, there has been some debate and some divide amongst the community.
Hey guys, morning. I think the key word that you guys have used a little bit, which I think is great, is balance. And I think that's what the environmental effects statement is doing so well, is actually looking at this project as a whole rather than just assessing like, hey, let's just build some bike tracks in the hills and see what happens. It's actually standing back and looking at the impacts they're going to have or be felt from those bike trails. So obviously, I mean, I'm a local resident and I personally can't wait. And I know there's many other local residents that can't wait, but naturally there's going to be some local residents who are either intimidated by the size or the sheer size of the project or what it might mean for Warburton in future. And that might be because they don't understand what mountain biking is and who are the types of people that this project's going to bring to town and what it's going to mean for the future of Warburton.
Well, Andrew, you do speak about that balance, but how do they find that balance? What are they doing about it?
Look, you probably need to really talk to the council for all the ins and outs, but I've read through the environmental effects statement and the level of study that's being done is pretty astronomical. I mean, I haven't really seen any other projects that have been to an environmental effects statement or say, you know, you've got hiking trails and the grand things that have been built and they haven't studied how wide the hiking trails are going to be across the park or how much noise the hikers emit from hiking and how that's going to impact residents and, you know, the flow of traffic into town and that sort of thing. So this is the only tourism or ecotourism project, to my understanding, in the country that's ever been subjected to this level of, for lack of a better term, scrutiny, but trying to remove the negative connotation behind that, because I think it is warranted, because this is the way we need to be looking at these projects as, you know, as these rural towns everywhere become so densely populated, especially now people can work from home, whether it's mountain biking or something else, there's going to be increased pressure on these rural towns. And sometimes the infrastructure might not be developed to accommodate that, and that's where it becomes so important that things like the ES are done, so that we can make sure that the project's being implemented properly, and, you know, that all voices are being heard, and that, you know, just because something isn't cute and fluffy, and because it's a fly that can't fly, you know, we still need to be doing our due diligence and our care as humans to make sure that we're able to implement projects like these that are going to have huge benefits felt right across the board, but we're not doing it in a way that's going to
hurt.
You know,
we'll speak to an ecologist in just a moment who's actually walked these parts of these trails, and we'll look at some of the impacts for not only this fly but for other ecosystems there as well. But you mentioned, Andrew, that maybe people don't understand mountain biking or don't understand the type of person that will be attracted to mountain biking. What do you mean by that? Is it that they're not as noisy as what people think, or that it brings a certain type of person? What don't we understand about mountain bikers?
Yeah, perfect. So I think with mountain biking, we've got to look at the fact that it was a fringe sport, and it was a fringe sport for a long time, and it was mostly considered an extreme sport. That's changed substantially, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, but more so over COVID. So if you look at the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the amount of bicycles that have been sold has doubled over the pandemic. The years before, the sales of bicycles were actually in decline. So we haven't just seen a little bit of growth, we've seen a complete reversal of the trend of, you know, cycling's popularity. So naturally that's led to more people out on the trails, and people will be very surprised at the demographics that are out riding. Often mountain biking, and this is to no fault of the general public who don't mountain bike, but mountain biking being perceived as purely an extreme sport is typically associated to, you know, intense individuals, strong personality types, quite loud. You know, the kind of guys that you maybe don't want to see overrunning your town, and that's fair enough. If I didn't mountain bike, I'd feel the same. The trails that are going to be built in Warburton don't really market to that demographic of rider, and that demographic of rider, what we call, you know, your downhill rider, or your rider for people that ride for, you know, conquering risk and that sort of thing, and for an adrenaline rush, it's a very, very small contingent. I would estimate, you know, less than 10 or 5% of the overall, you know, cycling population. But that demographic isn't being catered to in the Warburton network. It's a completely different product that's being implemented. I would say that if you look at people that hike and they go out for immersion in nature, and they, you know, they take that appreciation down and implement that in their lives, and that affects their decision making, that's the type of demographic you're going to be getting in Warburton. It's going to be families. It's going to be, you know, kids. We're going to have mums out on the trails. We're going to have different ethnicities. You know, it's a very inclusive network, and the network's being built to help break down, I guess, the barriers to accessing mountain biking and providing a product that people of all, you know, ages and abilities can come and use.
Well, if you don't mind holding, Andrew, you talk about that growing in popularity here in Victoria. Now, if you go to Tasmania, where it's huge, and I've seen it firsthand, Ben's on the line from Richmond. Ben, what's your experience in Tasmania?
Oh, hi, Rochelle. Thanks for taking my call. Look, it's lucky you caught me. I'm leaving to the airport in 45 minutes.
To go mountain biking?
A group of friends. We go, you know, a couple of times a year to Tasmania, to Derby, which is a fantastic success story. It's an area that was saved from logging. Beautiful, beautiful World Heritage forest that the local community has turned into an internationally now famous mountain bike destination. And it's beautiful. There's hundreds of kilometres of trails that's been done with the most incredible environmental sensitivity. And yeah, people are now coming, not just from around Australia, but all over the world to ride there. And we don't have anywhere like it in Victoria.
I find it fascinating, Ben, that we talk about a place where obviously they've had to clear land there for the bike trails in Derby and Tasmania, yet they're so big advocates for anti-logging there that seems to have protected the environment in that region, which I do find fascinating. Mm.
Look, I think people are perhaps a little bit misunderstanding how wide a bike track is. Your tyres are only a couple of inches wide. Most bike trails are, you know, maybe a foot wide. It's basically, I've seen bushwalking tracks that are wider. And, you know, for instance, the walking trails that they built in the Grampians recently are much more environmentally impactful than any of the mountain biking trails I've seen. Horses, all sorts of other, you know, users of the forests.
Just finally, Ben, because we've got a full board of calls and we want to speak to lots of people on this. If there was a trail that was equivalent in Warburton, would you be going there this weekend or would you still be getting on a flight to Tassie?
No, I'd be absolutely in Warburton every weekend. I know lots of people who've even bought holiday houses or property in the area in anticipation. And I think, you know, Warburton has potential to be a fantastic example of what's already happened in places like Tassie. And in fact, all around Australia, there's all over Tasmania and in other states, this stuff is being done. And just lastly, sorry, if I can squeeze in one more comment. I'm actually a staunch environmentalist myself. The reason I like riding so much is because I don't like riding my bicycle on the road with cars. I like being in the bush. I'm a keen bushwalker. And as Andrew pointed out, this is really just a lot like bushwalking, except you've got scope to cover a lot more ground. And, you know, it's not a noisy adrenaline junkie kind of sport.
Well, we'll go to lots of people. Ben, good on you. Ride safe. Look, as we said, we will go to people that are opposing it and we'll go to ecologists in just a moment. Thanks, Ben. Let's just end with you, Andrew, as a local resident. You know, when you walk the streets, when you go and get bread or milk or whatever it may be, are people talking about this? Is it front and centre in Warburton at the moment?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I go down the street a lot and, you know, you walk past a lot of people and you don't really hear boo about it, to be honest. It's not like it's plastered everywhere. And I think what people are maybe misunderstanding is, I know 177 kilometres sounds enormous, but like Ben said, I mean, you've got the 144 kilometres in the Grampians, which Ben's right, those trails are significantly wider and more environmentally impactful than, you know, 90% of bike trails. But it's not like Hall's Gap or the towns around the Grampians have been completely and utterly ruined by the presence of 144 kilometres spread out across the mountain range. It sounds a lot and it sounds sheer in size, but whether there's 10 people up there or, you know, 800 people up there at a time is going to be completely oblivious to anyone that's out doing their day-to-day business in Warburton, because most people are going to come and park before Warburton, get on their bike and ride out to admire the beautiful forests of the Central Highlands. And them being up there 700 metres above sea level and, you know, 500-600 metres above the people that are out having a coffee in Warburton or going about their day-to-day, they're going to be two worlds apart. So I know 177 kilometres sounds like a lot, but with how narrow a bike trail is and how far it's spread out, it's really not going to have this huge impact on people that they might think.
Well, we'll put that to some of our other guests in just a moment, but it's interesting. I mean, this is a debate where not everyone, Eden, is going to be happy.
No, but I thought it was an interesting point that Ben, the caller, made earlier about people buying houses in Derby because wanting to be close to the trails in Tasmania. Do you know the housing prices there apparently have jumped from about $30,000 to about $300,000 since they've built those trails there? So it just shows you the sheer size and popularity of the area once a trail is brought in. So I think that's something worth mentioning.
Should have bought property there.
Yeah,
thanks
definitely.
To Andrew Howison too, who has just joined us, the president of the Yarra Rangers Mountain Bikers. Brian's in Arthur's Seat. What do you think?
Yeah, hi, Rochelle. So I've been listening to the conversation. We moved to Arthur's Seat a couple of years ago and I've always been an avid road biker but took up mountain biking. And what I observed, particularly during COVID, was three generations and both male and female riding the trails, and e-bikes in mountain biking have given people the ability to now participate in the sport at an age where perhaps they'd be thinking they couldn't continue to ride a bike. But what I did see was an enormous amount of collegiate behaviour. There's a club down there that works very closely with the Parks Victoria, I think is the organisation. And they're about maintenance of the tracks, maintenance of the ecology. And if there's any behaviour that's bad, it's called out, and not in a nasty way, but stick to the tracks that are built, respect the vegetation. And I've got to say, it's a really nice atmosphere. You're always going to get the odd one that doesn't comply, but by and large, it's really, really, it's a great thing to see. And I think the ecology and the environment is something that people spend a lot of time thinking about when they're riding and building these tracks.
Well, thank you for the call, Brian. And that's something that we're going to have a look at now with Jordan Crook, Victorian National Parks Association. He's also a nature conservation campaigner, and he joins us now. Jordan, welcome to the program. I'm sure, as our caller, Brian, just mentioned, there's a lot that goes into looking at the environmental aspects of these tracks. What do you make of it?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm also a Yarra Valley local, just a stone's throw from where these tracks are planned to be. Yeah, there has been quite a lot of planning for these Warburton mountain bike tracks, and the issue of mountain bike tracks, both illegal and legal, is becoming more and more concerning for protected areas. And these protected areas have been put aside to protect threatened species and threatened ecological communities, and those places are protected in our national parks for themselves, for the environment, for those threatened species.
Jordan, would there be a plan that would be okay, or is it something that you just want completely off the table, that it's something that you don't want in Warburton, or is there a different route that the track could take? Is there some way that certain habitats could be protected, or is it black and white for you?
Well, I guess there's a lot more nuance to that, and there's a bit of context that's got to be put into it. So 64 to 65% of Victoria's native vegetation is cleared. It's gone forever. So the stuff we've got left, we really need to look after. And it's not about being against all mountain bike tracks. It's about putting them in the right places. And the track, so the VMPA is very, very concerned about the track along the summit of Mount Donabuang, and that it'll go through cool temperate rainforests. It'll go through the stoneflies habitat, Leadbeater's possum habitat. It'll increase the risk of pathogens coming in on bike wheels and spreading around and killing trees, such as the myrtle wilt, that will kill the rainforest off. And it's not about being against the tracks. It's about 22 kilometres of tracks out of 177 not going ahead.
And we just heard from the previous caller, they say that the tracks are quite narrow, and the demographic of those riding through them are quite careful within the environment. Will it make a big difference if there is a tiny track going through these areas?
So the council's EES documents have shown about 30 to 35 hectares of native vegetation will be cleared in the national park and the state forest to put in these tracks. And that includes 1.5 hectares of cool temperate rainforest, which is an endangered ecological community and one we don't have much of here in Victoria. And that was really hit hard by the 2019-20 bushfires.
We've heard some reports, and this is something, Eden, I know that you've looked into, when mountain bike trails are really successful, the tourism areas are really successful, and then they work. They've got invested interests to ensure that the local environment is protected. Is there a way that this could be a positive, Jordan, do you think, if done properly?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, here in the Yarra Valley, quite a lot of the area is in state forest, so 350,000 hectares of state forest out there are forests that have been logged and had their conservation value degraded. That would be a great place for mountain bike tracks to be put and taken out of protected areas, taken out of high conservation areas, and people can ride out there to their heart's content.
Jordan, thanks for your time on the Conversation Hour. We'll leave it there.
We've got Derry in Warburton. Hi, Derry.
Well, I'm actually the moderator and admin of Rethink Warburton Mountain Bike Destination. We're a group that formed in 2018 when quite a few locals, it was the first that they heard that we were going to become the mountain bike capital of Australia. So this idea that they're just little tracks and everything, I think, well, no, that's not really the aim of this at all. So we've spent the last 4 years looking into all of this, and including reading all the documentation and all this latest one for the environmental effects statement, and all this thing about it being carefully planned, and that it's really looked into it deeply. I'm going to have to disagree with that, because we've had a lot of people going over this, and there's a lot of concern even from big bodies like Parks Victoria. Someone else said Parks Victoria, this is their project. No, it's not. It's actually the council's project. But Parks Victoria is worried about it. Melbourne Water's worried about it. We've got major submissions put in against it, put in for the EES, talking to the actual documentation, saying it's not good enough. We're saying it's not also. You should look at the socioeconomic.
Yeah, well, the socioeconomics are a big part of it as well. Derry, thank you. Let's have a chat with John. John's called from Bayswater. Morning, John. What did you want to say?
Oh, good morning, Rochelle. I've got a background in marketing and also live up in the area, of the that part of the Yarra Valley. The plan for this facility is quite large geographically and appears that it's going to be built all in one hit. What I would like to see from the organisers is the growth of the facility, because you can't make 180 kilometres of tracks in sort of 6 months and have the 500-car car park in Wesburn at the footy oval just overnight and then expect to be populated by all these cyclists. It needs to grow slowly and work out all sorts of teething, what people like, what people don't like. And I say that because we have a very good mountain bike track over at Listerfield Park, which was used for the Commonwealth Games, and it's barely used nowadays. And there's reasons for that, and that's what needs to be looked into. So
what would be your solution there? Do they slowly develop the area before they open up the tracks?
Yeah, so like any good business that's going to have longevity, you start slow, you get it established, you put in quite a few tracks, you work out what works, what doesn't work, and then slowly grow the whole facility over, say, 10-year period, rather than trying to build it in 1 year.
Yeah, over a long period of time. It's a good idea. Thanks for your call. Maybe you live in Warburton, you live in the area, and you have strong views about this, or you're a keen mountain bike rider and this is something that you would like to see. It would, if goes ahead and goes ahead at the scale that they're claiming, Eden, would put this particular track in Warburton in like the top five or the top 10 of what's classified a gold class bike track. So whether or not it would bring international visitors, we heard from a caller before, that he was heading off, about to get on a flight to go to Tassie to ride the bike trail there. But how we weigh up the balance between ensuring that the local environment is protected, but at the same time, that town can prosper and grow if it's something that they want.
And like I mentioned earlier, just to see the sheer popularity that Derby, the amount of people that travel to Tasmania for those mountain bike trails, I think if something like that was to be seen here, Rochelle, Warburton would be developed and such a hot spot for people to go and visit. So I think it would be, yeah, positive for a lot of people to go there. But like you said, it's just trying to find that balance or making sure that the ecology there isn't too tarnished.
Edie Serlin is a conservation biologist and a freshwater ecologist, also known as the water bug guy, which is what you shall be known on here at the Conversation Hour. Do we need to worry in particular? Let's start with the little wingless insect. Is it really that big a deal? Do we need to worry about it?
Hi. The wingless sawfly is one of the species that we need to worry about. We need to worry about all species, but this particular one, it's not just a bug that can't fly. It's you can regard it as a natural heritage example. It's like a word of art, if you like, a work of art. That it's irreplaceable. It is unique in many different aspects. One of them is it doesn't have wings, but there is another one that's got a very unusual life cycle. The fact that it's only found in a tiny area around the summit of Mount Donabiai and nowhere else. It's an example of an insect that hatches, becomes an adult while the snow is still on. And I have a photo, for example, of an adult walking in the snow. This is the only insect that does that in Australia. There are examples from Northern Hemisphere that do something similar, but that's the only one here, and that's very unusual.
Yeah. You said recently, Edward, that 90% have dropped off in the area. I mean, why is it so important to bring back those numbers?
Well, because with the increasing irregularity of the rain and the snow and increased temperatures, this insect relies on availability of snow every year, because it lives in this ephemeral trickles. It's a very strange and very specialized habitat. So it's very likely that it's just going to disappear completely.
Are there other areas of concern for you, whether it be other insects, other wildlife, or even looking at this, the landscape in general, Eddie?
Well, it's a very sensitive vegetation community, the cool rainforest. It's very sensitive by itself. I observed other freshwater insects that I couldn't even recognize the species when I was looking for the stonefly. So it's very likely that that particular area around the summit is a kind of a very sensitive hub to very high biodiversity that we are not even aware of.
Eddie, with your research, obviously you've looked at this particular case, but are there other examples of tourism hotspots that have affected the local ecosystem like this?
Well, I hesitate to think, but I'm sure there are places like around Mambula, for example, that have been affected by the downhill skiing or development of the resorts and things like that, where we also have a whole heap of sensitive mammals and sensitive invertebrates and sensitive vegetation community.
Just finally, Eddie, if this trail goes ahead and if we do see this wingless insect disappear, what then is the flow-on effect of that? What's its position in the ecosystem?
Yes, it's a very common question that people ask me, what's the big deal? We just lose one species. You have to look at it in perspective of what's the big deal of losing one species? What is the big deal of losing 20 species? You may not see the effect of it immediately, but because everything is connected in this world, whether we like it or not, the effect will come. For example, the myrtle wilt that affects the trees in the area, the Nastagia scandinavii, these majestic trees, while their well-being is balanced on the existence of one species of fungus and one species of beetle. You know, if something is modified one way or another, all of a sudden we have a flow-on effect of hundreds of trees dying, for example. In freshwater environment, example, we might not see flow-on effect for a while, but then when you see dead fish floating down the river, as we've seen a couple of years ago and in the Yarra during Commonwealth Games, all of a sudden we kind of see the effect when it's too late. Do we really want to risk it?
That's
and I'm
important.
Not against the mountain bike trail per se. I love mountain biking. It's just, it needs to be assessed in the context of national park that is placed there specifically to protect vegetation and animals from us.
It's an important point that you do bring up there, Eddie. Thank you for chatting to us this morning. I guess, Rochelle, Eddie did bring up a good point there about the flow-on effect that we see with, you know, something, a tiny fly like that could have, you know, is it important, but it does affect the whole ecosystem. And I must say, in agriculture, over the past year or so, I've done a few stories like this on conservation, and a little thing like a sandalwood tree, which I knew nothing about before doing this story, they were cleared to the brink of extinction a couple of hundred years ago. And sandalwood, what you use in incense and oil,
yes.
That's become extremely popular. There's only a handful left in the environment now, and it's really devastated, particularly in northern Victoria, along with that and native grasslands that farmers have said have been lost, and the effect it has on the environment and ecosystem. They've lost a lot of animals in those areas because of that. But there is some positive stories coming out of it. I did a really lovely story with a lady who's bringing them back from the brink of extinction, and a farmer that's just working really hard to bring native grasslands back to the region.
Yeah.
And ecologists are saying that it's really bringing a lot of animals back into the region that weren't there before. So, I mean, people are working hard.
They are. And when we look at the onflow effects as well, there's, yes, businesses may flourish and it will bring more people to the town, but we know that that's been a huge problem for a lot of towns around Victoria in terms of lack of affordable housing, many people putting their properties up on Airbnb, or the reason why you move to an area is so that it is nice and quiet and, you know, so it isn't really busy. George has called us from Warburton. I feel like half of Warburton has called us today, which I'm absolutely loving. Georgia, how do you feel about this particular bike track? Is it going to be good for your town and your community?
I think it's definitely going to be interesting. There's already a lot of congestion in the area from things like the Redwood Forest and even the Warburton Water Park that they've just put in. I mean, yeah, on weekends I struggle. I actually live in Millgrove, but I struggle to go into Warburton on a weekend, even just to get a coffee. There is no parking and there's just so many people around. So I think that sort of already destroyed the
area. And so what about accommodation and things like that? So if you've got people travelling, whether it be from interstate or overseas, I can't imagine that Warburton's got a local resort where people are going to check in and hang out. You'd be relying on short stays and private rentals.
Yeah, there's definitely limited accommodation already. And I think that's something that I've heard a bit about is like people buying up multiple properties in anticipation of this bike track being put in to use as Airbnbs, and I guess that's taking away from locals being able to buy into the housing market and, yeah, being forced to move out of the area.
Thanks for the call, Georgia. We'll leave it there, but we'll head to Heather in Flinders. Now, Heather, apparently you've got a lot of trails up near your part of the woods.
Well, we've got a ski lodge up at Mount Bourbon, so when they said there was no trail bike riding in Victoria, I was a bit surprised because it's been huge up there for years. And every year we go out cross-country skiing, there's just more and more trails. And they have whole weekends where literally the trail bike clubs hire every lodge on the mountain, which ours is being hired in a couple of weeks' time for an event. Yeah, so there is certainly stuff going on that's already there.
Would you be in support, Heather, of a large mountain bike trail being built and set up in Warburton? Do you think it's a good idea?
Yep. That's a tough one. I'd say no. If I was a local, I'd say no. I guess we get used to getting another trail put in each year and you sort of go, okay, there's another one. Mm. But to have a big thing put in all at once and just change the whole environment, I think, yeah, that's tricky.
Good on you. Great to hear from you. Let's have a chat to Richard. Richard's in Warburton as well. You're a local business owner, Richard. What do you think? Would this help your business?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, ironically, we didn't even know that the mountain bike trail was a thing when we bought the business. So we're fairly agnostic on whether it will be great for our business. But I think unquestionably we'll bring a whole bunch of people. And I think the key difference is it's going to bring midweek trade, which I think the whole valley has been craving for years. And all of the research around the world tells us that the average stay is multiple nights, which by default means people are staying midweek. And I think the other thing I'd like to say is I see people already. So we've got the Warburton Motel. We have a whole bunch of people come to stay from previously all over the world and currently all over Victoria who come here to ride already. And they are a really diverse bunch of people. We have lots of families and parents riding with kids and couples riding and singles. And so it really is a very broad demographic. And I think that stereotype of kind of the middle-aged, you know, loud bloke is not what we
having a midlife crisis.
Yeah, that is not what we see coming through the motel. And I think another key point is it isn't actually just about Warburton. I think these things bring huge numbers of tourists, and as a result, this is going to be great for the entire Yarra Valley. People will be staying, you know, all over the valley, not just in Warburton. Mm. So I think it's a much bigger spread than Warburton.
Richard, you mentioned there that it will bring business. As we heard with Derby, I read that people stay on average 4 or 5 nights, so you're right there. But is the area prepared? We've had calls from people saying that the infrastructure isn't there to house that many people.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it isn't here currently, and I think one of the toughest things about any big project like this anywhere in the world is that, you know, the infrastructure and the thing have to kind of grow hand in hand, and there's always going to be a tough opening period of the first year or two where I absolutely think the infrastructure is going to struggle and it's going to be a challenge, but we've kind of got to hope for, you know, look ahead to the end game, but it will be problematic in the first instance, no question.
Are you the only hotel or motel, I should say, in town, Richard?
No, there's a decent little spread of accommodation providers, but I agree the short-term accommodation problem, you know, thing is is a big problem for legitimate
It has huge onflow effects to the entire community. You might get to the point where you're needing to put bunks in your motel and just cram as many in. I'm joking. I seriously don't think that's a good idea. Please don't get upset at me. But that balance, I mean, we see it, don't we, Eden, with when there is growth, there are impacts, both for the environment, but also too for the town and why people move there initially, housing, you name it. But I didn't know that there are so few gold standard bike trails in the world. And there's a little part of me that says, well, that would be incredible for a small community like Warburton to be globally recognised. It's just at what expense?
I agree. And look, when I've been to Warburton's one of my favourite places in Victoria, and I love heading there. And I just think it's great for people to see the beauty that Victoria does offer. But you're right. Yeah. What expense and how do you balance that? Or can you balance it, Rochelle?
It's certainly gaining in popularity, mountain bike riding. Maybe that is you. And maybe you ride in other parts other than Warburton. And do you feel like all of us here in Victoria would benefit from a gold class standard bike trail in Warburton?
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
My name's Rochelle Hunt. I'm in Melbourne. Eden Henninen is with you as well in Bendigo in central Victoria. We'll actually go to someone in Bendigo in just a moment because there are some great bike trails in Bendigo. But have you ever been tempted, Eden? I mean, I can barely ride a push bike along suburban streets, let alone get out there and, you know, really have to navigate terrain and dirt and just cannot see it ending well for me.
Oh, see, I actually love cycling. My dad and I go weekly cycling trails around Melbourne. So, yes, it is something I must admit I've been a bit lazy, but definitely interested, particularly, yeah, in Harcourt. I've heard that there's south of Bendigo some good trails that way. But I feel like someone who's quite clumsy, I might need a bit of training before I dive into this.
Lots of correct. But also what I found fascinating today is that there is a bit of a stereotype, you know, that it's middle-aged men going through a midlife crisis, you know, that it's the new half marathon that people are taking or full marathon, you know, that are taking up mountain bike riding. But it's certainly not, you know, families, women as well. Kate Kellett is actually a 24-hour world mountain bike champion. She's a part of the volunteer cycling team at Bicycle Network and is on the committee for the Geelong Mountain Bike Club. So you're a busy woman. Kate, can you see the concerns at Warburton or do you think that this would be a big win for the local community?
Good morning, Rochelle. Yeah, look, I definitely do see the concerns and I think they're valid, but at the same time, I obviously see significant gain and benefit for the local community as well as, you know, the larger Victorian community as well. So I think it's just a scenario where it's just weighing up the pros and the cons. And I think, you know, there's a significant amount of work that's been done recently in terms of the environmental effects statement. And I think that's sort of been 18 months to 2 years in the making. So, you know, the people that are involved in this particular project certainly aren't taking it lightly. And, you know, the mountain biking obviously is the end game and putting in place a gold standard facility within Australia. But, you know, there's lots of things that need to be factored in as part of that to ensure that, you know, people, businesses and the local community don't lose out as part of that and they'll actually gain from that.
And it says, Kate, you're a world mountain bike champion. That's quite a
title.
Significant it is.
Yeah, I wasn't quite world. I was number two, so not one step below, but yeah, certainly.
Pretty significant. I'm sure you've been to many places around the country and the world. Is this an issue that you do find in local communities where these big mountain bike trails have been built?
I think initially, and there's always obviously a lot of uncertainty for some of these communities because it's something that's new, it's something that's big, and I think initially, you know, it can come across as being quite threatening. The communities that I have been to, both within Australia and also internationally, I think, you know, they in the end have welcomed it because I've talked about the pros and the cons, and I think, you know, those local communities, there's no question that they have benefited from that infrastructure that has gone in. So,
Kate, you called it what will be a gold standard. What makes it gold standard?
Yeah, so there's a certain set of criteria that needs to be met, and as you can imagine, that's quite sort of detailed. But one of the sets of criteria is it needs to be more than 150 kilometres of trail network. So that's the first criteria. And for Warburton, I think there's proposed 177 kilometres worth of trails. So that's the main one. And then there's obviously, you know, a whole host of criteria that would need to flow from there.
And Kate, it says the gold standard, I think, in the mountain biking world that's significant. Well, if it does come to Warburton, how significant would it be having one of those in Victoria?
Oh, look, it would be huge. I mean, the fact that Australia doesn't have one, and we've got we've done, you know, particularly well in the last few years on the international mountain biking scene. I think there'll be a lot of mountain bikes listening to this call that are aware of what Beck McConnell has done overseas. I mean, I think she was ranked number four in the world last year, and then the previous 2 years, I think she had the bronze medal at the World Championships. And then we've had a host of other athletes that have done incredibly well. And to think that, you know, we have this representation on the world scene, but we actually don't have a gold standard facility within Australia is, you know, I guess it's quite surprising.
Kate, am I reading this correctly that it says you're a 24-hour world champion mountain bike rider? Pray tell, I can barely ride around the block. How are you riding a mountain bike for 24 hours?
Yeah, look, there's a fair bit of strategy to it. I have to say that I think I liken it to some of the other sports, and I'm probably it's more princess-like potentially than some other sports. And what I mean by that is I ride my bike for 24 hours, but I have a support crew that assists me in doing that. So really my job, if I look at it quite clinically, is sort of simple. I just need to go and ride. I'm not doing a lot of
I don't think there's anything princess about riding 24 hours straight at all.
That's one tough princess. I always, again, everything comes back to food to me for those 24 hours, right? When do you eat? How do you eat? What do you eat? Like,
I've got a question about a bathroom break too.
Totally.
What do you do that?
Yeah, so I'll tackle the food one first. So I eat a lot and you're consistently eating throughout the entire event. So carbohydrates obviously is key, hydration is key. So when I talk about, I guess, being the princess, I've got my support crew actually tracking, the amount of carbohydrate that I'm consuming every hour, and we have a target and we need to hit that target across the 24 hours to be able to go the distance. Toilet. So toilet is a bush toilet, and not a hole in the ground, but it's usually
just a quick
tree.
Yeah, quick go. Yeah. Do what you
I imagined a moving solution there, but you have to jump off.
Politely put, a moving solution. Oh, Kate, I love it. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been good to get your perspective.
No worries at all. Lovely to speak.
See, Kate Callett, 24-hour world mountain bike champion. My mate who loves sort of extreme sports and pushing himself, he did a 24-hour marathon. We were all sitting at home, you know, eating pasta and drinking wine, wondering how he was doing. And what he ate when he would stop was sausage rolls. I'm not sure how sausage rolls would give you the sustenance that you need.
Did he do that for the taste, or is there something in sausage rolls that keeps you going?
I don't think there's any nutritional value in sausage rolls. You're purely doing it for the taste. Yeah. Jo's in Spring Valley. Hi, Jo.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. What do you think? Is this a good idea? Something that Warburton will benefit from?
I've never ridden down towards Warburton, but I'm all for new mountain bike tracks. I'm an avid cyclist, mountain bike cyclist in Bendigo, and we've been, you know, trying to get our own sanctioned trails here for nearly 10 years, and we're closely watching Warburton. For me, getting out and riding anywhere in Victoria, I'm very selective on where we're going, because not every mountain biker is the same. And I think a lot of people seem to think, I actually kind of take offence to a lot of what a lot of the callers are saying, and even you guys are talking about how it's men. It's actually so not men, and there's so many more women really coming out and coming into mountain biking as a recreational activity. I'm actually the women's coordinator for the Mountain Bike Club, and I hold social rides monthly, and I also put on a women's only cycling event in May. And the increase in women that are actually riding, and of all ages, and my age and older, and I'm 46, so I'm not, you know, a spring chicken and 18 and, you know, crazy, but I'll give it a red hot go.
Yeah. No, I think that's been quite apparent today that there's, we've been saying there's families, there's women, that the stereotype is not necessarily true.
No, it's not. It's not. And, yeah, I mean, cycling in general, it's always been looked at as a very male-dominated sort of thing. When people start, you know, throwing around opinions on certain things, it's, oh, the men. Yeah. But the amount of families is incredible. And so Warburton will really open up, you know, more locations for families. Like my family, we own a bike shop and we travel as a family of five cycling. We did a cycling tour last Australia Day last year. We went to five major mountain bike parks around Victoria that I'd never ridden in, and we invested money in those five towns.
Yeah, that's right. You spend
to
money.
To give our children the chance to ride and to give myself a chance to ride somewhere else. And Warburton will definitely become a destination like that too. But I fully agree with all the callers that have called in, especially the gentleman that was talking about taking it slow. I definitely agree with that because it is a process, and I definitely agree with it. They need to be protecting the vegetation and the animals and stuff as well.
Thanks for your call, Jo. And like she said, I think there has been a balance today, Rochelle, about men and women getting involved. I'm definitely someone who would be more interested in riding in central Victoria, but apparently there has been quite a lot of injuries happening on these bike tracks. Jill in Brunswick's on the line. You're a nurse, Jill. What have you noticed?
Yeah, look, I've worked as an orthopaedic nurse in a major hospital in Melbourne, and I saw a doco about Derby in Tassie, how they had lack of like surgery to be able to, wrist fractures, cervical fractures, brain injuries are really, really common. So if you haven't got a good hospital that can control this, then they're going to have to get the helicopters in, take them back to the major hospitals, and this again is going to push in premium health insurance up. I don't know if it will or not. I'm just thinking about it.
That's a really good point. I'm trying to think. I don't know the area that well. What would the local hospital be there?
Hillsville's got a major hospital, not a major one, but a big hospital. But there's not a great lot of trauma hospitals there. Mm. So, and there is a heck of a lot of injuries. That's all I like to say anyway. Yeah.
Good on you, Jill. Thank you. Well, you mentioned Bendigo and whether or not there's a lot of bike trails there. Maybe this give you some activity for the weekend, Eden. Barry Floyd is the past president of the Bendigo Mountain Bike Club. Barry, I spent a lot of time over the last 20 years in Bendigo, but for whatever reason, I've never really considered it to be a mountain bike area. Is it well known for mountain biking?
Hi. Thank you for having me on. Yes, yeah, very well known for mountain biking and it is known as the city in the forest, so we are surrounded by beautiful box ironbark forest, and it's a very popular activity. And I think the comment on the injury perspective there was that's driven by the huge increase in popularity for mountain biking that has occurred over the last 5, 10, 15 years.
Did it cause a problem though, Barry? I mean, it's a fairly valid point that was raised. If the hospital's not big enough and if you've got a huge influx of people there and they're all kind of coming off and breaking legs or spraining ankles or doing wrists and whatnot, then what happens?
I've definitely flipped a few times on my bike and not on the mountains, on a straight path. So I imagine that there'd be quite a few injuries in mountain bike riding, Barry.
Yeah, I guess there's always risks with any physical activity. I think what we need to recognise is the enormous physical and mental health and well-being benefits that actually getting out into the natural environment provides. And there's lots of recreational activities that take us out into that environment, such as bushwalking, trail running and mountain biking, and they all rely on trails in that environment. And so realistically, providing sustainable trails, well-planned, well-constructed trails through the environment is about how we manage, how we get out and interact in that natural environment.
Barry, there's been some pushback.
How we get out and interact in that natural environment in a safe manner too.
There's been some pushback for the Warburton Trail that this will have a huge impact on some areas of the environment and in particular the ecosystem there, and a little wingless insect that may actually become extinct as a result. Has there been any negative impacts in the Bendigo region, in the central Victorian region, when it comes to just the local environment there?
Well, I guess there's negative impacts on the environment with everything we do. So again, what I would emphasise is that having properly planned and designed trail networks is about minimising and avoiding those negative impacts to the best of your ability. So it's about providing sustainable trails to allow people to actually get out there and interact in the environment without having significant impacts on the biodiversity of the area.
Yeah, it's how we do that makes it tricky.
Yeah.
Barry, thanks so much. It's Barry Floyd. He's the past president of the Bendigo Mountain Bike Club. I think, Eden, it is in the forefront of everyone's mind, but as Barry sort of said there, well, there's going to be consequences with everything that you do, but I don't know whether that's necessarily how you want to go into something like this. It's having as much knowledge and being equipped with as much information as you possibly can about that local environment, of what the impacts will be, but then maybe what the resolutions could be as well. Maybe there's a better outcome at the end.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, and I personally don't agree going into something that there's always going to be a consequence of what you do, so you can do whatever you like. There's an environmental consequence for clearing land for bike trails. So I think it's important to have that conversation and, like you said, do the proper research in going into an area or an ecosystem that you don't have a lot of knowledge about.
What's been interesting is to learn how long this has been in development. This has been years and already millions of dollars. There's been a lot of consultation. Nothing has been decided yet. So I guess one good thing that I've learnt out of today is that they're not going into this lightly. This is not something that is that's going to be built really quickly and that the consequences haven't been thought through. But there's also been some interesting pushback and people that we didn't even get a chance to get to, which was investors, right? So housing investors, business investors are already kind of spruiking this in the area, saying, well, come to Warburton, you know, there's going to be this big world-class, gold-class bike track here and you will benefit from that before this thing's even built, before it's even constructed.
Yeah, that was what surprised me the most as well, actually. You don't really think about if you're going to build something this large, how do you house tourists? How do you build an area that can fit that many people and that are prepared? You said people going down to get their morning coffee in Warburton are already bombarded with large crowds. So how do you build an infrastructure around this?
I don't think you do. I think people just start renting their houses out and then that causes a whole onslaught of problems. And we've seen that down the Surf Coast and so many other areas. If you missed any part of today's program, we've actually done other shows on mountain biking as well. The best thing to do is subscribe to the Conversation Hour, to the podcast, go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been the Conversation Hour. Thanks so much for listening and we look forward to spending time with you soon.